Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
The world waits for a miracle. The heart longs for a little bit of hope. Oh, come, Emmanuel. A child prays for peace on earth, and she's calling out from a sea of hurt. Oh, come, Emmanuel. And can you hear the angels say, tears of a mother, the baby's cry is the sound of love. Come down, Emmanuel. Oh, he is the song for the suffering. He is Messiah, the Prince of Peace has come. He has come, Emmanuel.
Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and that was, y'all probably know it by now, that's my girl Lauren Daigle with Light of the World. And I cannot listen to that song without thinking about my daughter. Many of you heard her voice here a couple days ago when Jeff and Jason surprised me with their recordings on the program. But my daughter likes to sing that song in the shower. My five-year-old, she sings that song, Glory to the Light of the World. Well, I'm so glad you guys have tuned in to the program today. We have a full slate on deck, but I want to begin in the scripture. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Some of this I've covered here on the program before, but there's some portions at the latter verses that I have not discussed quite yet. And I'm going to read verses 6 through 15. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 6 through 15. And I'm going to start right now. Here we go. This is Apostle Paul writing in the second epistle to the Thessalonian believers, and he says this: Now we command you, brothers, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from any brother who is walking in idleness and not in accord with the tradition that you received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with toil and labor, we worked night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. It was not because we do not have that right, but to give you and ourselves an example to imitate. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command: If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busy bodies. Now such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living. As for you, brothers, do not grow weary in doing good. For if anyone does not obey what we say in this letter, take note of that person and have nothing to do with him, that he may be ashamed. Do not regard him as an enemy, but warn him as a brother. Now, I've spoken about this at length. I've talked about how in the Thessalonican church, the particular context here that many in Thessalonica were saying that, well, since Jesus is coming back, why do we need to have a job? We don't need to work. Let's just hang out and chill until Jesus returns. And Paul was like, what? Man, cut that foolishness out. Y'all better get busy with your hands, because it was a fundamental theological understanding, which I would suggest that pensions towards idleness really come from a breakdown of theological understanding as well as an understanding of work ethic. But that inappropriate theological understanding led some in Thessalonica to lend toward idleness. And Paul wrote it was such an issue in the church because there's something about that sinful nature that idleness is often more attractive than fruitful work with your hands. So if Paul does not make this correction, this idleness has the potential to spread like gangrene in the Thessalonican church. So once Paul gets wind of it, he writes them, whoa, you guys got it twisted. Just because Jesus is coming back, that doesn't mean that you sit on your duffs. You need to be fruitful. You need to be engaged. You need to exercise yourselves in the creative capacity that God gave you. So Paul says it very plainly and bluntly. If there is any among you who is not willing to work, and I've explained this before, this is not a broad brush indictment of those who are unable to work, those who are physically incapable, those who are mentally incapable. This is not Paul's indictment of them. Paul is saying those who have the physical, mental, and entire capacity to work, yet remain unwilling to do so, he shouldn't eat. Now, this is a perfect time and a perfect opportunity for me to interject at this moment that this is Bible. This is not politics. Simply because, and I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again now, simply because politicians talk about things, that does not automatically nor inherently reclassify the subject matter away from Bible towards political. I hear lots of people saying, man, y'all are talking about them politics. No, I'm talking Bible and its application to modern society. The Bible, the Lord through Apostle Paul, is communicating the reality that a work ethic, especially among the believer, is not optional. It's necessary. And when I say work ethic, I'm not limiting it to the role, whether or not you are the entrepreneur and job provider, or whether or not you are the employee and job manner. This applies to everybody, because the biblical foundation that I would suggest, really, that the anthropological history that provides a gospel foundation for this reality, is that fruitfulness through the creative capacity that God has given us is a blessing from God that predates the fall. I would submit to you the concept that work is objectionable is a fallen state concept. God blessed man with the capacity for fruitfulness, ingenuity, creativity, and work prior to the fall. In fact, it was so intrinsic to who mankind was, God made the observation and communicated to Adam that it wasn't good for man to be alone, but does not reveal to him his riblet until he had already demonstrated engagement in the work process. Not until after naming the animals did Adam get the revelation of Eve. And he says, Isha, for she comes from Ish. It's not until after that. But then Paul goes even further. He talks about the idleness being people who are idle. Notice, idleness is not synonymous with no activity at all. Because if you notice in verse 11, he says, if we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but they're still busy at what? Being busybodies. Idleness is strictly referring to the fruitfulness, being fruitful what God has given us. But those who were idle were still busy at other stuff. You ever heard the phrase that an idle mind is the devil's workshop? You ever recognize that a lot of the things that transpire is times where people, especially young people, should be busy doing something else, but they're engaged in things that they probably shouldn't be engaged in. Idleness is not synonymous with do-nothingness, because there are lots of idle people that are busybodies that Apostle Paul is laying out right here. But Paul says, I'm not preaching to you something that I'm not willing to live under myself, nor is it something that I have not already demonstrated among you. Y'all remember what I was when I was with you? The Bible records that Apostle Paul was a tent maker. In fact, he and Priscilla and Aquila, they were able to meet rallying around their tent making abilities. Tradesmen, if you will. Paul says, when I was with you, I didn't eat bread without paying for it. Not because I couldn't have. I wanted to give an example of what kingdom citizenry is supposed to look like. Well, then Paul goes further. And this is all the things I said before, not really the main thing I wanted to talk about right now. Paul then goes and says in verse 13, as of you, brothers, do not weary in doing good. He's including in that working until Jesus returns. And then he says, if anyone doesn't obey what we say in this letter, take note of that person and have nothing to do with them. See, we live in an era where, you know, the Bernie Sanders and his ilk, they want to remove the stigma of idleness. You know, they want to remove the social rebuke of idleness. There was a time in America where the communities around the idle individual would say, oh, that's a shiftless individual. Now, stay away from him. He's shiftless. You know, many moms say, now, stay away from Bubba. Bubba don't work. You don't want to deal with Bubba. Bubba don't have a job. But our society now, we want to romanticize idleness. Refer to it as if you have a moral right to idleness, to reward idleness. Paul says, take note of him and stay away from him. But then he goes further and says, do not regard him as an enemy, because that can happen. And I see this happening, man. I see this happening in our country today with the divisiveness concerning political discourse. And of course, I understand that Paul is writing this specifically in reference to body life, how to engage with members of the body of Christ. But I would add to that, that we have to be very careful that we don't see those who disagree with us as enemies. But as Paul says right here, when I say enemies, people that you hate, all right? When you see an opponent, you must vigorously advocate for your position. I'm not saying be a mamby-pamby. Oh, you know, we just came by tiptoeing through the tulips. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying we have to be careful that we don't allow our disagreement to boil over there into hatred, which I believe we're beginning to see in our society. But Paul says not to regard him as an enemy, but to warn him as a brother. Now, what, pray tell you, is Paul talking about the brethren in the body of Christ who are engaged, who are fruitful? What are they to warn the potentially idle brethren about? I believe Apostle Paul is encouraging the body to warn them, because when we reject the internal creativity that God has blessed us with as a result of being image bearers, as a result of being bearers of the Imago Dei, when we are not fruitful, when we don't work, when we are not using what God has created us to use, there is something inside of us that dies. It's no wonder when you have one generation of people who learn well the ways of welfare dependence that it becomes a multi-generational facet. Because something inside of us dies when we don't use what God has given us. I believe Paul was warning them because an aspect of our reflection of the Imago Dei is marred when we allow idleness to become a characteristic of our lifestyle. It's no wonder that even in our physical bodies, when we don't use certain muscles, what happens? Do they continue to get vibrant, get stronger, get bigger? No, they atrophy. They atrophy. Why do they atrophy? Because of non-use. The same thing happens with our mental faculties. You know that if you have ever been around elderly people, one of the things that I used to minister in nursing homes is that they want you to engage them, to stimulate the mind. The same thing applies to the creative capacity that God has given us. When we don't use what God has given us, it atrophies. So I believe Paul was encouraging the Thessalonians to, among other things, to warn those who had a penchant toward idleness, to say, listen, you don't want to go down that route because you think that you may be getting over, but you're actually participating in your own demise. And when that creative capacity inside of us atrophies to such a degree, it becomes not only your individual problem, but becomes a generational problem.
Alabama judge fights for free speech. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. A judicial code of conduct in Alabama bans judges from publicly discussing any pending case anywhere in the country, and Liberty Counsel has now filed a federal lawsuit. In practice, this code silences the free speech of some of the brightest legal minds in the state from speaking about any current cases anywhere in the nation. Alabama is the only state with this constraint, which was labeled unconstitutional by the American Bar Association. Alabama Supreme Court Justice Tom Parker requested a preliminary injunction against this violation. In the past, this code was used to silence or punish judges like Justice Parker. If unproven claims are filed, judges are instantly removed from the bench. This is guilty until proven innocent in Alabama. Liberty Counsel will continue our fight for free speech for Associate Justice Tom Parker and all the judges in Alabama. Please pray and stay informed at lc.org.
Hi, this is Jim Stanley, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to help save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and heard that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, "I just can't allow this baby to be killed."
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in the womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Underwrite a free ultrasound and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
Why do people who like Brian Fisher tune in to Focal Point?
To hear what he's going to say next.
Let's go to James from Indiana.
There are so many ways to catch the Focal Point program on one of our almost 200 stations, live streaming at AFR.net, podcast, phone apps, and if you'd prefer to watch the show, we have Facebook Live on our Focal Point Facebook page. Why do people who don't like Brian Fisher tune in to Focal Point?
To hear what he's going to say next.
Join me weekday afternoons at 1 Central.
Mom is a face washer, a coupon clipper, and a listening ear. She's a diaper changer, a laundry folder, and a mender of hearts. She's a master juggler of the jobs of the day. She's simply incredible and incredibly busy. At 1 Million Moms, we understand the hurried pace of the average mom. That's why we've made it so easy for you to take a stand against the trash that's in today's media. Visit 1millionmoms.com.
Nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born.
Tax rates are too high today, and tax revenues are too low. And the soundest way to raise the revenues in the long run is to cut the rates now. And the reason is that only full employment can balance the budget, and tax reduction can pave the way to that employment. The purpose of cutting taxes now is not to incur a budget deficit, but to achieve the more prosperous, expanding economy, which can bring a budget surplus.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III. We're also on Urban Family Talk. That was the voice of former President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, serving from 1961 until he was assassinated in 1963. And did I hear that right? Did I hear John F. Kennedy say that the way to preserve lasting and full employment was to cut taxes? Did I hear that properly?
Yeah, he said that. Exactly.
Am I understanding that properly? He said that what needed to happen was to provide revenue that will be lasting to the American people, and the most complete way to do so and to make sure these gains were lasting was to cut the tax rates now. Now, why did I play that, ladies and gentlemen? Well, I just wanted to. John wanted to show you that your grandpa's Democrat Party is not the Democrat Party of today. You see, because John F. Kennedy was himself a Democrat. But do you think you'd ever hear a Democrat say that to no buyers? And I play that because just earlier today before I came onto the program, the House of Representatives passed the final version of the tax reform proposal that President Trump has been pining for, and we expect the United States Senate to vote on that proposal tonight. That would then send the broadest tax overhaul that we've seen in the country since within the last 30 years. It's pretty interesting. I was reading up on it, and you know, a lot of people say a lot of different things. But even on CNN, they say, well, yeah, it's going to end up with about $1,800 less in taxes for everybody. I said, so if y'all know that, why do you do all these other things? You know, of course, you had to read down in the article. And I'll post the article on the Hamilton Corner Facebook page later. But I'm saying you go through all of these words, then you finally say, well, yeah, it's going to be better for some people, you know, even middle class people. And then you hear a lot of people saying that, well, this is going to do nothing but benefit the rich. This is taxes going to be enough for the rich people so they can drive around their whips. They will go to the store and buy up all the stuff because we like rich tax cuts. That's impromptu. Little freestyle for you.
Good.
Little freestyle for you. Well, the thing is, that is hilarious. That is like we are completely void of the capacity to do math. Like people say, oh, this is going to be the most beneficial for the top 90%. Do you guys realize that the top 10% of taxpayers pay more total than the entire 90% below them? Sure, it's going to benefit them more. They pay more in taxes. Ay, Dios mío santísimo. This is crazy to me. But what we're witnessing, though, is, and man, Thomas Sowell says it the best. Thomas Sowell said it's not that Johnny can't think. Is that Johnny has Johnny doesn't know what thinking is. Johnny has confused thinking with feeling. And we have got to get to the place as a people where we want everybody to win. We don't want to win by pulling somebody else down. That's the thing. The popular media acolytes and the talking snakes and all of the pundits and the people amongst the regressive elites in our country, they want to foment discord by making you hate somebody else. Even though they know your hatred is not going to change your lot in life, it's just going to make you mad at somebody else. So they pit the country 99% versus the 1%. You know, wow, this is only going to benefit the rich. Question, why do you care if it benefits the rich if it's going to benefit you too? Well, it's going to benefit the rich way more. Well, how much in taxes have you been paying? If you've been paying $20,000 in taxes, you don't have the ability to get a $1 million tax break because you haven't been paying $1 million. It just boggles my mind. And the thing that's the most mind-boggling for me in this regard is how easily many Christians are wrapped up into this. We have to get to the place where we don't want to gain at the expense of someone else, that we want everybody to win. Now you have in the 60s, John F. Kennedy, a Democrat president, saying the very same thing Republicans, who are fiscal conservatives, that say now. Yet today, it's, oh, the GOP tax scam. Well, if a Democrat is saying it, is it still a GOP tax scam? And I just have a strong desire for us as an American people, where we get to the place where we don't look for a come up at the expense of somebody else. You know, you see all these regressive politicians saying that you're robbing from the poor people. You're robbing from him. Listen, you don't own my money. The government doesn't own my money. How can somebody be robbing something they don't own? It's just, and I know I'm oversimplifying this. I know that I am. But it's just sad. So since we're talking turkey, let's talk boiled, break, and fried turkey all together. Why don't we? I talked yesterday at length, and people don't want to talk about this. They don't want to talk about this because they want to maintain their perception. They want to maintain identity politics. They want to maintain class warfare, which if we would read a little bit, and I've referred to this book again, but I'll say it now, Rules for Radicals, A Pragmatic Primer for Realistic Radicals. All of this is right out of Saul Alinsky's book. A populace that is unified is hard to control. It's hard to manipulate. So what do these people do? Which I will remind you, Saul Alinsky, in his dedication of his book, said that we must at least provide an over-the-shoulder hat tip to the first radical, who, although he didn't win, ultimately, he did inherit his own kingdom, Lucifer. So quite frankly, we have people employing Luciferian tactics that are simply working today, where you have people, oh, this is rich people's tax cuts. These are rich people's tax cuts. I'm saying, man, I've never, you know, been employed by a poor person. And what John F. Kennedy was arguing for, which is just simple mathematics. High taxes result in rich people not really losing too much, if you haven't noticed that. What happens is that these businesses who will now enjoy a reduction of the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%, they have the real potential to compete with bringing their businesses back to the country. What happens, though these businesses would not have brought these corporations and manufacturing facilities and all these other things, which, by the way, people saying manufacturing jobs are not coming back to America, that's a lie. Over 100,000 have been returned to America just this year since President Trump has been in office. But I digress momentarily. What happens is that you broaden or expand the tax base, okay? Let's say we have 320 million people in America, but only 100 million of them are paying taxes. By lowering the tax rates, allowing corporations to have more money with which to innovate and to create more jobs, what happens is that you increase the number of people who are paying taxes. What happens when that number goes from 100 million people, and that's not a fact, I'm just using that to illustrate my point, goes from 100 million people paying taxes to 175 million people paying taxes, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? More money flows into the government coffers. If you don't reduce the corporate taxes, you maintain the status quo, the only potential you have is to take more money from the people who are already paying taxes. It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. But the point that I was making and Miki was making on the show yesterday is that the current Democrat Party has been overrun by socialists. So instead of hearing some common sense reasoning like John F. Kennedy just played for you, that we just played for you, you don't hear that anymore. All you hear is GOP tax scam. And then my response would be, okay, well, what is your plan? Tax the rich. To what end? How much? All of it? Then what? Tax the rich. Then what? And I say, man, isn't it interesting that you don't hear much of a jobs agenda, much of an economic agenda coming from these people? Because the not-so-secret is that their only agenda for economics is to take over private enterprise. They don't like private enterprise. I said yesterday, and I really hate identity politics. I'm just sharing these facts so that you in the listening audience can be armed to share this with those in your inner spheres of influence, that President Trump is presiding over a job boom for African Americans. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in 17 years for African Americans, 7.3%. For Hispanic Americans, it's even better than that, 4.7%. The lowest it's been for 44 years. That can't be true. I had to laugh to myself because I saw a friend of mine on social media post this, a link to this story, and immediately, as soon as he posted it, said, this must be fake news. Has to be fake news. Why? Why does it have to be fake news? Then when the statistics were further elucidated on the social media post, it's like, oh, I guess it is true. Unemployment is down to 4.1% in the country right now. Since President Trump has been in office, 1.7 million jobs have been added to the American economy. These are not my opinion, folks. These are facts. Many conservatives have tried to push for drilling in the Anwar province. Guess what? President Trump is getting this passed in this current tax bill. You didn't know that, huh? That was a feature of this current tax reform proposal to allow drilling in the Anwar province. Telling like it is. In 2012, Republicans went to the Supreme Court to try to have the individual mandate for Obamacare ruled unconstitutional. Republicans failed there. Then Republicans attempted to get the individual mandate taken out in the Obamacare replacement, the skinny bill, which I didn't like. I'll say it again. Republicans failed there. Well, guess what's included in this tax bill? Repealing the individual mandate. Yep. Neil Gorsuch was appointed and confirmed to the Supreme Court. You have the tax reform. You have the reversal of net neutrality at the FCC. Yeah. There was a big fuss, big fight over whether or not Americans would be able to have drilling combined with the transport of oil and with the Keystone Pipeline. President Trump kind of green-lighted that, but not much fuss.
Getting rid of regulations?
Getting rid of regulations for every one that's proposed, 22 are repealed. And people are asking, well, how is this happening? The Dow, the stock market has eclipsed 24,000 for the first time in history. All of this is happening right now. Right now. 1995, the Jerusalem Embassy Act was passed, but not one American president had the courage to acknowledge Jerusalem as Israel's capital. President Trump did. He's announced plans to build a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. And so all I'm saying, listen, there are things that the president does that make me cringe. I feel like the president and his Twitter fingers, they must soon part. I'm telling you, they make me cringe. There are things about the president that I despise. But when you lay out the facts, he's pretty much doing what he promised to do. Economy is roaring right now. I've heard some people say, well, yeah, this is Obama's economy. Really? How come the stock market never went that high under President Obama? See, you cannot underestimate the optimism that business owners have with President Trump's presidency. And so they're making investments and making things happen, and we're seeing it in the beginning of this economy. Listen, all of this, most of this has been done without much assistance from the legislative branch. Can you imagine if the legislative branch is more favorable disposed to the president? All I'm saying, you can say what you want, but the president's pretty much doing what he promised to do. And I know some people are saying that, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. Oh, I saw that. So you had in the House, I didn't talk about the numbers. So the bill passed in the House on partisan lines, 227, the tax reform bill, passed 227 to 203, with 12 Republicans in the House voting against it. And no Democrats voted for it. So again, I'm bringing back my point, and I'm going to end this segment with John Kennedy's clip again. Because what happened? You used to have people in the Democrat Party like former President Kennedy who understood basic economics. But something has happened, and I'm doing this to show you the stark contrast and the devolution in the partisan politics. And listen, y'all have heard me say this before. It's no doubt about it that the Democrat Party is going steamrolling, fire-breathing, screaming to the left. But the Republicans are uprooting from their previous positions and following them right along the pathway. No doubt about it. In fact, get ready, because I'm an equal opportunity truth teller. They're planning things concerning this budget deal because they have to do another temporary budget funding measure. That it stinks to high heaven. I haven't talked about it yet because I'm waiting on some more details. But I smell a rat. It might have the tinge of the swamp rat with the budget deal. And we'll discuss that too. But as far as this is concerned, and many of the Republicans who voted against the tax cuts proposal in the House, many of them are from high tax states. Because you see in this bill, which I think if they did this intentionally, I think this is genius. The tax reform proposal eliminates the ability to deduct state income taxes. So you have people who live in high tax states like California and New York, they're screaming bloody murder. But I'm thinking, I thought you wanted to pay your fair share. I thought you wanted to pay your fair share. It's easy to scream that nonsense when you're able to deduct what you're paying at the state level from your federal taxes. But now when it's time to really pay the piper, now you're crying uncle. I'll say it like my old basketball coach in high school used to say, pain stimulates the brain. It's imagine how smart we get when pain is on the line. Jay, if you would play the John Kennedy tax cut clip again, just to show our audience what used to be.
Tax rates are too high today, and tax revenues are too low. And the soundest way to raise the revenues in the long run is to cut the rates now. And the reason is that only full employment can balance the budget, and tax reduction can pave the way to that employment. The purpose of cutting taxes now is not to incur a budget deficit, but to achieve the more prosperous, expanding economy, which can bring a budget surplus.
John F. Kennedy, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back on the other side of this break, we'll take your calls. The number to call in is 888-589-8840. That number, once again, is 888-589-8840. 1-800-430-2240. We'll talk taxes, and I want to get to a little bit on Nikki Haley. Stay close.
Hey, here's some great news, and we could all use some great news for 2018. If you're worried about your healthcare costs or you feel like you're missing out because open enrollment is over, well, it's not too late to join MediShare. You can sign up anytime, and think about this. The typical savings for a family with MediShare is about $500 a month. Think what a difference that would make to your budget. Again, that $500 a month is the typical savings. It could be more or less for you. Definitely worth taking a couple minutes to find out. There are over 300,000 MediShare members sharing each other's medical bills, and something they're now loving, MediShare has a telehealth program that lets you log in and meet with a doctor in real time within the comfort of your own home. For everything from a cold or flu or for a prescription, you can save a lot of time and money, and it's free. Again, open enrollment might be over, but you can still join MediShare. Here's the number to find out more, 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, everyone. Carl Kirby with Reasons for Hope, talking about one of God's most amazing super creatures, the giraffe. Did you know that giraffes move both legs together on the same side of the body when they walk? But when they run, they swing their rear and front legs in unison. They can also go longer without drinking water than a camel. They only need to drink once every few days because they get most of their water from the plants that they eat. When modern man first studied the giraffe from a technical perspective, they gave them the scientific name Giraffa camelopardalis because it was thought to be the evolutionary combination of a leopard and a camel. Talk about a major gaffe with a giraffe. Get it? Fact is, all of the unique features that we see in giraffes are not benign and beneficial accidents of natural selection, but rather they have been delightfully designed by a super creative, intelligent, purposeful, and loving God. The heavens truly declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. For more information, check us out at rforh.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Ninth graders at East Hampton High School will no longer be referred to as freshmen. Instead, the young people will be called first years. The name change, all part of an effort by the Massachusetts school to become more inclusive. The school district said students have a right to be free from discrimination based on gender, sexual identity, and sexual orientation, which leads this commentator to believe that some poor underage snowflake took offense at the word freshman. The good news, kids in the upper grades will still be known as sophomores and juniors and seniors. Apparently, all the hubbub about gender-neutral language came from the school's Gender Sexuality Alliance. Apparently, that's a thing these days. Back when I was in high school, all we had was the 4-H Club. To borrow a phrase from Archie Bunker, it was a time when girls were girls and men were men. Yeah, I know that's politically incorrect these days. I'm Todd Starnes.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We're just talking taxes, turkey, and John F. Kennedy. That's what we're doing today. The number to be a part of the program, I see callers are already lighting up the phone lines. The number is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. Getting back to the point I was making before the break, that you had Republicans from these high tax states that may be or may not be Republicrats, I'll let you decide. They were objecting to the tax proposal, the tax reform proposal, because they were losing the ability to deduct their high state income taxes from their federal taxes. And I think that was a very shrewd move to put right in front of the American people in these high state taxes, these high tax states, the reality of regressive policies. Because, you see, people in these states have been able to spout off pithy sayings like pay your fair share, all the while they weren't even doing it, you know. And the ability to have the rest of the American people subsidize their high state income taxes allowed them to have less impact, to feel less of that blow. But if they were required to feel more of that blow, I think you would see a little bit less of the pay your fair share commentaries coming from people from these states. Another thing I wanted to get to, and I may not get to this today. I have more things I want to get to with Nikki Haley concerning Iran and things there. But I do want to talk about The U.S. being the Lone Ranger standing with Israel, because following President Trump's announcement of Jerusalem being acknowledged by the states, by the U.S. as the capital of Israel, all 14 members, 14 out of the 15 members, with the U.S. being the 15th member, of the U.N. Security Council were voting in agreement, and they passed a resolution to force the U.S. to rescind its acknowledgement of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Yes. And the U.S., as a permanent member of the U.N. Security Council and maintaining veto power over those resolutions, vetoed that resolution. The veto required the U.S. to override the decisions made even by our own allies, France and Britain, voting along with the Egyptians who authored the resolution to rescind President Trump's announcement. And I raised that for several reasons. One, that it harkens back to the time where the U.S. was the lone nation standing with Israel at the United Nations. And I also raise it to show the biblical significance, because when you see in Scripture all nations turning against Israel, that's not hyperbole. We've been hearing these drum beats for years. And this provided a recent example of this reality. Nikki Haley went on to say that this is an insult that won't be forgotten. That this was an insult that won't be forgotten. I don't know what's going on with our callers. I see some, I think. I don't know if we're ready, but I'll keep talking until we get everything squared away. We've been having some technical difficulties here with the calling system, but we'll keep working on that, and I'll keep talking about this. With the United Nations, all 14 member nations of the UN Security Council voting against Israel, voting against the U.S.'s announcement, which is interesting. Well, you really have these other nations thinking they can tell us where to put our own embassy. And Nikki Haley concluded her remarks by saying that, you know, this is a reluctant, nevertheless necessary usage of our veto power on the UN Security Council. Monday's veto marked the first time the U.S. has used its veto power in over 6 years. And she stated, quote, "We do it with no joy, but we do it with reluctance. The United States will not be told by any country where we can put our embassy." Where we can put our embassy. I don't know what's going on. We're having some technical difficulties with the phones. But I felt like Nikki Haley's comments were right on point. And I think she's been doing an amazing job at the United Nations. I have some other audio from her. And I apologize for those who are calling, because we wanted to get to calls. I know there have been a couple times we hadn't been able to get to calls. So we're trying to get that worked out. But I want to play some additional audio from Nikki Haley, because she is, in my view, doing a great, great job before the United Nations. Well, she dropped some evidence before the United Nations that shows, I know we have that nuclear deal with Iran, but it seems like Iran ain't playing by the rules too well. JP will play clip number 3.
4 days ago, Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif wrote an op-ed assuring the world that Iran has been misunderstood. He wrote, quote, "Iran's military capabilities comply with international law and are entirely defensive." Mm. Instead of stoking violence, Zarif promised that Iran and its partners, quote, "labor to put out fires while the arsonists in our region grow more unhinged." But the United Nations just released a new report that tells the opposite story.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the story of Iran as the arsonist.
Uh-huh.
The report shows the Tehran regime not putting out fires, but fanning the flames of conflict in the region. This was Secretary General's fourth report detailing Iranian compliance or noncompliance with UN Resolution 2231. That resolution places specific prohibitions on Iranian conduct. In its strongest language yet, The Secretary General's report describes violation after violation of weapons transfers and ballistic missile activity. The United States welcomes this report, as should every nation concerned about Iranian expansion.
See, what Nikki Haley is getting at is that the nuclear deal is not the only thing that Iran should be paying attention to. There is UN Security Council Resolution 2231 that prohibits them from engaging in certain arms transfers, i.e. arming militant Islamic rebels around the country, as well as developing and delivering additional weapon systems to other people. Nikki Haley, there's more she wants to say. Go ahead and play clip four, please.
The report makes a convincing case that Iran is illegally providing the Houthi militants in Yemen with dangerous weapons. The report provides devastating evidence of missiles, conventional arms, and explosive boats of Iranian origin used by the rebels in Yemen, all of which violate UN resolutions.
All of which violate UN resolutions. And in this particular presentation, if you've seen the coverage of this, you probably hadn't seen too much of it, but Nikki Haley is literally standing in front of a fired missile that she's going to describe, and I'm going to play some of that audio for you too, as this is clear evidence of Iranian fingerprints. It is a missile that was fired by the Houthi militant Islamic group, fired toward the civilian airport in Saudi Arabia. Think for a moment having a missile launched at one of our airports in our country, not a military site, but a civilian airport. And they declassified this evidence, meaning the recovery of this fired missile, to show the world. To say, listen, we're not just talking here. We want all of you to come and look at the hard and physical evidence. You see this piece, Iranian made. You see this piece, Iranian made. Even though it was fired by the Houthi terrorists from Yemen, they got the missiles from Iran. And Nikki Haley's point was, how can you, and one side of your mouth, saying Iran is adhering to the requirements of the nuclear deal with the U.S., while at the same time violating UN Security Council resolutions. You want to present yourself as if you're putting fires out when the reality is you are arsonists. You are arsonists. Let's go ahead and play clip five. And this is a longer one, so I'm going to have to interrupt it a little bit. Go ahead and play clip five, please.
As you know, we do not often declassify this type of military equipment recovered from these attacks. But today, we are taking an extraordinary step of presenting it here in an open setting. We did this for a single urgent purpose. Because the Iranian regime cannot be allowed to engage in its lawless behavior any longer. International peace and security depends on us working together against the Iranian regime's hostile actions. The fight against Iranian aggression is the world's fight. The United States is acting today in the spirit of transparency and international cooperation that is necessary to defeat this threat. In this warehouse is concrete evidence of illegal Iranian weapons proliferation gathered from direct military attacks on our partners in the region. Behind me is an example of one of these attacks. These are the recovered pieces of a missile fired by Houthi militants from Yemen into Saudi Arabia.
Pause it right there. Now, this, oh man, and this really stirs me up because as a trial attorney, this is what you want to use in closing arguments. You want to get the evidence and be able to convey to the jury that, listen, I'm not just sharing with you my opinion. This is the hard and fast evidence. Here, Nikki Haley is showing the actual recovered missile pieces from the Yemeni-fired missile. To say, look at this. You guys know who made this. All of you know where this stuff came from. And it just once again begs the question, what did we get out of this Iranian nuclear deal? What did we get out of it? We have the continuation of Iran operating as a state sponsor of terror. And they're also, I mean, I didn't even have the clips for this, but you have at the same time in pursuit of this Iranian nuclear deal that President Obama put the kibosh on a DEA investigation because you had Hezbollah, which is an Islamic jihadist group aligned with Iran, selling drugs all over the world and using their drug money to fund their military, to fund their terrorist activities. And you have the Obama administration putting the kibosh on it so that they get the Iranian armed nuclear deal done. Guys, this is terrible. And how long are we going to continue to play footsies? And part of her speech, Nikki Haley said, quote, "Everybody has tiptoed Iran in fear of them getting out of the nuclear deal. And they're allowing missiles like this to be fired over to innocent civilians. The Iranian regime cannot be allowed to engage in its lawless behavior any longer." Go ahead and play the remainder of the clip, please, Jay.
The missile's intended target was the civilian airport in Riyadh, through which tens of thousands of passengers travel each day. I repeat, the missile was used to attack an international civilian airport in a G20 country. Just imagine if this missile had been launched at Dulles Airport or JFK, or the airports in Paris, London, or Berlin. That's what we're talking about here. That's what Iran is actively supporting.
Actively supporting. This is what Iran is doing right now. That's not what they've done. This is what they're doing right now. Ambassador Haley also said in her remarks that this is not merely an issue for the U.S. to deal with. This is an issue for the world to address. Yet we have the Security Council, the U.N. Security Council, want to unanimously condemn the U.S. for naming Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Can't make this stuff up. Can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. So my questions, and as I come to the close of the program, is what are we going to do about this? You know, I played the audio from JFK in the 1960s, a Democrat president saying that the way that we sustain economic growth and viability going forward is that we cut the tax rates so that we can expand the tax base and that we establish growth long term. What are we going to do about the scriptural admonition that if a man is not willing to work, which requires the understanding that a man who can work, fully capable, yet refuses to, shouldn't eat. Then Paul tells the believer, and if you have some of those people hanging around you, you probably shouldn't have anything to do with it. Not probably. He says you shouldn't have anything to do with a man who's unwilling to work and can do so. And Paul goes even further and says, don't treat him as an enemy, but warn him. Warn him. Then you have the tax proposal that passed the House today. The Senate is going to vote on it later on. Yet you have regressives who want to call it the GOP tax scam, but they don't want to explain how it's a tax scam. JFK explained it. Cutting taxes is not about building or adding to the deficit. It's about expanding prosperity for all Americans. Yeah, we have different parties today. And listen, the regressive bent is not limited to Democrats. The same thing with Republicans. That's why I said it's high time for Christians to become the most unpredictable voting bloc in the country, to where anybody who would offer themselves to public office, they know if they're trying to make their appeal to Christians, then they're going to have to work for it. They're going to have to show and prove in order to get us to co-sign their election. This is Abe on the Hamilton Corner. Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.